Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Celluloid Fever Dreams. As always, I'm your host, Wyndham Jennings. And again, if I sound a little rough this week, I know in last week's episode I mentioned I was getting over a sinus infection. And a quick trip to the doctor revealed that, yeah, it wasn't just a sinus infection, so now I'm in quarantine. So, yeah, again, my voice sounds a little rougher than normal. Well, I apologize. I'm going to do what I can to minimize that. And again, welcome as we take our weekly walk through the weird, wild, wonderful, wacky world of movies I enjoy watching. This week we're going to, I guess, turn into a very serious podcast about film, and I'm going to turn into one of those snooty gatekeeping critics, because for the second week in a row, we have a foreign-made film, and this week's not even in English, it's subtitled. So, you know, hey, we're getting into some heady stuff here. Very serious. Very, very serious films. This one is Big Man Japan, or as it's known in Japan, the Japanese title Dai Nipponjin. I hope I pronounced that right. It's a crazy film. I discovered it through a trailer on YouTube several years ago, and I watched it on the Hoopla app. And if you're not familiar with the Hoopla app, first off, they're not a sponsor, but it's one of the streaming services that's tied to local libraries. It's the one tied to our local library. You just need a library card in order to get onto it. It costs nothing. You are limited in how many downloads of stuff you can get a month. I think the limit's 5, so it's not going to replace a streaming service, but like your library, it's going to have a ton of different movies from all kinds of genres, you know, some newer stuff, some older stuff, some stuff like this, some weird stuff. So you know, if you're just looking for something and you can't find anything in your regular streaming services, I mean, it's just a library card. And on top of that, they also have audiobooks, ebooks, so albums that you can check out, and it's free. Once I discovered it, you know, I've been using it off and on for several years now. So yeah, I'm not sure where else you can find Big Man Japan if you want to check it out. I think Amazon you can rent it, iTunes you can rent it, but yeah, Hoopla, you can see it for free right now. So what is the movie? Well, it is a tokusatsu film, which is Japanese for special filming. It's the term they use for special effects heavy television and TV shows. This particular one, Big Man Japan, if you hadn't guessed already from the title, is a sort of a parody of the Ultraman style, and I hope I'm pronouncing this right, movies and TV shows, the Kyodai hero genre, which Ultraman and the Ultra family, such as Ultra 7, who's my personal favorite, are probably the most famous examples. It's not to be confused with something, not to be confused with the Kaiju movies, which are more like, or Daikaiju. I've heard it referred to as both, which are like the Godzilla, Gamera type films. This is something different. But yeah, Big Man Japan follows Masaru Desaito, who is played by Hitoshi Matsumoto, who actually also wrote and directed the film. And he is the employee of the Department of Monster Prevention, which is a subdivision of the Japanese Ministry of Defense. And his job is to, well, become a oversized superhero and fight off the various monsters that attack Japan. Now, when you first meet him, it's a mockumentary style, but when you first meet him, for the first several minutes, all it is just this camera crew following around a guy. And there's no reason given for it. They ask him a few questions, get him to tell a couple things about himself, but it's not until probably 10 minutes into the movie before they really reveal who he is and why they're following him around. And it's a really absurd film. I'm going to be talking about some of the things I do really like about it, but I'm going to warn you going in, if you're a fan of the these style, you know, the Godzilla movies, the Ultraman TV shows, those types of films, this is perfect for you. I mean, it is a, as I said last week, with For Your Height Only being a note-for-note send-up of the James Bond movies of the era, you know, the fight scenes in this one and some of the interludes where they follow him around and what it's like to be a size-changing hero in modern Japan is just perfect. If you're like me and you grew up on those series, you know, I discovered Ultraman, years ago on a UHF channel, really aging myself and for a lot of you out there, but it come on every Sunday morning. And I also remember they ran Ultra 7 for a while. So, you know, I went into this, you know, after seeing the trailer, I kind of went into this already hyped for it and wanted to see what they do with it, and it lived up to my expectations. And there's just so many little running jokes and gags and things that I didn't catch the first time I watched it. This is only the second time I've watched it. I watched it with some friends about a year and a half ago. But like, there's a running gag where I'm just going to call him Big Man. But he loves things that get bigger. You know, like in the opening, he talked about he always carries an umbrella, but not just a regular umbrella. No, it's one of the expanding umbrellas, one of those you hit the button and it'll deploy. And then when they show him at his house eating, he talks about dried seaweed. He likes dry seaweed because it stays small until you need it. And then when you put it in water, it expands to do its job. And just little clue, little things like that throughout the movie I really like. One of the things that you find out very early on, as soon as you find out he's Big Man Japan, well, even before you find out he's Big Man Japan, his house is graffiti. There's all sorts of insults spray painted over it, signs in the yard, just, you know, things putting him down. And then, like I said, at first you're not really sure why, but then when you find out why, it turns out that, yeah, people just don't like a giant superhero who fights monsters in modern Japan. Because of all the property damage, you find out that the way he transforms, you know, Ultraman, it was a capsule. It's just a little thing. He'd pull out, he'd press a button, and boom, he's Ultraman. He's 300 feet tall. Big Man Japan, you find out that they have to power him up with, you know, hundreds of thousands of volts of electricity. So there's people who complain about that, about the effect that has on the environment, on the power grid, you know, how inconvenient it is, for them to have to siphon off this much power from the grid in order to create Big Man Japan. And it's really driven home the first time he's called into action. I'm going to jump ahead a little bit. In that they follow him in a very unheroic shot. If you're used to seeing heroes with like fancy cars and equipment, no, he is on a scooter, a very slow moving scooter, driving up this winding road towards a power plant, and all along the road on either side is graffiti calling for them not to use Big Man Japan, insulting him, saying that it's, you know, bad for the environment, it's bad for Japan, bad for the infrastructure, just, you know, all these. And he just slowly just drives past to the point that it gets ridiculous. I mean, you just sort of go numb to all of the negativity located within the scene as he goes to his job. And even during the interview, the initial interview, when you first find out who he is, he gets two rocks thrown through his window. So, yeah, people just genuinely do not like him. And it's kind of weird because people who don't know he's Big Man Japan, like there's a small scene in a restaurant where you find out he goes two or three times a week to eat, and he always orders the super noodles. The owner just talks about him like he's a regular customer. He notices him in there and notices he eats the same thing all the time, and, you know, doesn't really have an opinion on him. He's just a customer. And, you know, then when he finds out he's Big Man Japan, he's like, oh, you can sort of tell there's a little difference in how he looks at him now. And whenever he gets called upon, they call it the bait. And it's one of the more ridiculous scenes in the film, because they make it you don't get to see it the first time he's called into action. You find out that he's on call basically 24/7, since they never know when a monster's going to appear. He heads to the power plant, and the first time you don't see it, but you get to see him. And again, unlike Ultraman, who is this slick, you know, silver and red superhero with all these powers, Big Man Japan is just 100 feet tall, and he carries a lead pipe. And he's got his hair, because of all the electricity, when he's normal size, it's kind of long, but once he's powered up and turns into Big Man Japan, it turns into like a high top fade, like used to be popular like back in the 90s. I know the rap group Kid and Play, I believe it was Kid that had it. But yeah, it's just sticking straight up on his head, probably adding another 20 or 30 feet to his height. And yeah, no powers, no anything, just, you know, a regular guy, just now 100 feet tall with a lead pipe, no lasers, no guns, no nothing. The monster designs, oh, let me talk about when you do get to see him bake, as they call it in the film. It starts off like kind of very solemn, like he does a very stiff military style walk, and he's wearing the and I'm gonna get the word wrong, so I'm not even gonna say it, but it's the flowing robes like you normally see in like the samurai films, like the samurai wear the big sleeves, the big legs on the pants, and he's very serious and strutting into the building. And part of it's a religious ceremony. There's a priest there, and they call it the first part of it is the ritual of soul insertion, so that the spirit of the almighty god of the power stone will be imbued within him, so that he can take all the electricity and he can grow to the enormous size to fight the monsters. And it's very simple. They thump a drum and then ask, is the power vested in him? And he agrees, and yeah, it is. And after that's the ritual of life. And while they're doing this, the camera crew talks to a couple of military guys, because like I said, this is the Department of Defense. And they talk about how the rituals, used to be a lot more elaborate, but over the years, as they don't need him as much, they've sort of cut back on the budget a whole lot, and the ritual is very simplified, and it's just basically, one of them even actually says that he thinks the ritual is unnecessary, that really what's more necessary is the forms that he has to fill out, which basically, anything goes wrong, liability forms and whatnot that he has to are pretty much more important than the rest of the ritual. But that's kind of a running theme as well, as you find out that he's not the first big man in Japan. He is, I don't know, the subtitles are a little confusing. When he refers to his grandfather, he talks about his grandfather was IV, and I don't know if that's supposed to be four. But yeah, Masaru, who is the current one, when he talks about it, like I said, it's confusing in the subtitles because it's IV, and I don't know if that means four. I don't know why they would say four, because they do show some flashback footage. It looks like repurposed World War II footage, because it's black and white, and you get to see the grandfather's big man Japan, and he's nowhere near as big as the current one. He's nowhere near as big as Masaru is when he transformed. He's still probably 20 feet tall, but that was the glory days. You know, Masaru talks about, he actually calls it the golden age, and he talks about that, you know, his grandfather got whatever he wanted. He was constantly surrounded by, had an entourage. He the public was just hanging on every fight that he was in. There was merchandising. He had servants. He was a rock star. All the footage, the photos they show all this merchandise in the house. He was the big guy, literally, at the time, and everybody loved him. And all that's kind of gone downhill. And him being the current one, he's seen more as a nuisance. But he also admits that during his grandfather's time, there were a lot more monster attacks, or a lot more monsters in general. And not only that, there was a lot more monster fighters. He talks about that besides his grandfather, there were probably between 20 and 30 other monster fighters at the time. And you never see any of these other fighters. They never talk about them. This is like the only mention you got of it. But it's something that sort of drives home how far big man Japan has come from his grandfather's days. And they do touch on the grandfather and on the father. They do a sequence where he goes to visit the grandfather in a nursing home. We get to see a few scenes of them together, talk to the residents about, how he's doing. The grandfather suffers from a form of dementia, and the current one wishes he could take care of him, but he doesn't make enough money. The grandfather has a pension that keeps him in the nursing home, but of course the grandson wishes he could take care of him, bring him home and take care of himself, with the job and his own limited finances prevent that from happening. And you find out the father died. The current big man says that the father tried to make himself bigger and apparently overloaded himself with too much electricity, and it resulted in his death. Not long after this, the grandpa somehow manages to get away from the nursing home, or treated to a pretty humorous sequence of him somehow managing to re-energize himself and just wandering around Japan doing things like blowing into a smokestack to make a whistling sound, picking up a plane at the airport and speaking into the propellers to get the robot voice. And they're all accompanied by these headlines about, big man Japan terrorizing Japan and creating a nuisance. And of course this does nothing to help the reputation of the current one, and leads to a confrontation with his agent. And I got to talk about that. I've neglected that. You meet his agent early on in the film. Not long after big man Japan has complained about how much money he makes, he gets I think I wrote this down right, he gets $2,000 a month flat salary, and then $3,000 per monster, so it's like $5,000 a month. And he says he wishes he could get about $8,000 a month. It would really help help him get a better place to live, maybe even be able to take care of his daughter better. It's another thing you find out, he's got an estranged wife and a daughter, and I'll talk about that in a minute. But every time they show the agent, like the first time they show her, it's after his first monster battle. We're getting to the monsters here too. But you find out that it takes him several days to return to normal size, and there's an inn or it's an inn with a bar or restaurant that he's allowed to rest at and to recuperate and to shrink down. And of course you get the kids peeking into the room watching him sleep, because they're not used to seeing somebody that size. But his agent, he lives in squalor and cheap clothes that are very worn out, and she is dressed to the nines. The filmmakers even point out how nice the stockings she's wearing are. They have a dragon pattern going up both legs. And every time they show her, she's in very nice clothes. At one point, she rolls up to talk to him, and she's just bought a brand new car and brags about how much it cost. And her main thing is in the film just seems to be getting advertisement for him. Now, he doesn't do commercials, but where he gets to be 100 feet tall, she actually rents out space on his body like a billboard. So as he's fighting various monsters throughout the movie, he'll have like an advertisement for like white chocolate as a tramp stamp on his back, or he has various advertisements like on his chest, his stomach, different little things like that. And she'll actually tell him, like, when you go to fight the monster, make sure, because we televise these things, make sure that people can see the advertisement clearly. Like, he gets one monster into a bear hug, and you hear her yelling, it's like, don't cross your arms, people need to see the advertisement on your chest. it's never stated outright, but yeah, she's getting paid. I don't know what her agent fees are, but she is ripping him off. And as I started talking about it a little bit earlier, I'm gonna swing back around. Like I said, he's just a tall guy, 100-foot tall guy, big hair, lead pipe, and in purple brief underwear. No superpowers. And I was wondering if it was pulling like a Bruce Banner thing, like he, you know, gets burst through the white robes and he just, you know, the underwear gets to a magical size. But no, it's an actual really cool sequence when they actually do show him turning into Big Man Japan. And he's standing between these two poles, and strung between them is the biggest pair of purple underwear you're ever going to see. And then he climbs into them, and he's standing in them. And you can just see, like, the outline of his face and chest pressed against them as they hook up, put clamps on his nipples. And that's how they run the electricity through him. That's what causes him to increase in size and become Big Man Japan in a pretty cool sequence. But let's get to talking about the monsters. These are some of the craziest monster designs I have ever seen in my life. Throughout the movie, he fights seven. Let me just double check my note. Seven. And, you know, if you watch the kaiju movies, if you watch Godzilla over the years, there are some crazy designs. I mean, you know, outside of Godzilla and who's a giant lizard, you know, take off on a dinosaur, or a Baragon, who, you know, again, seems like a hedgehog mixed with a dinosaur. There are a few, like, offbeat ones, I think I pronounced it right, Gigan with the big buzzsaw on his chest, Ghidorah with three heads, things like that. But these monsters, the first one he gets called out to fight, and I love the introduction for the monster. Like, he'll get the call, and then there'll be like a little, it looks like a notebook page torn out, but they'll talk about the monster. They'll give it a name, and then they'll give little, I just wrote one of them down. The first one he fights is the Strangling Monster, and it'll just say, you know, Strangling Monster, likes to suplex build. These are the characteristics of the suplex monster. And they're bizarre. It looks like, if you know what the Michelin Man looks like, it's kind of a skinnier version of the Michelin Man, just a white banded body. And as it moves, the bands separate, and you see what looks like cables underneath. It's got a human head on a real long spindly neck, and the arms just make a loop. Just, you know, there's no separation of them. It's just from one shoulder looping all the way around to the other shoulder, and it suplexes buildings. It just puts the loop around them, flips them up and over, destroys buildings, moves on, and just laughs the whole time. And it even suplexes Big Man Japan when he first shows up. And from there, the monsters just get crazier and crazier. The second one is, let me see. They just call it the Leaping Monster. They're not named. They're just, you know, very basic description. But it's just a giant human head on a muscular bird-like leg with a claw on the end of it. And that's all it does. It just jumps around. And you know, he fights it and pins it between two buildings and kills it. And they're all like that. The craziest one is, to me, they call it the Evil Stare Monster. And the body looks like a plucked chicken. It has skinny arms and legs, and has a long neck that ends in a oversized single eye, and the neck protrudes from between its legs, and that's what it fights with. It will, you know, throw the eye, and, you know, on this extendable neck, it'll swing it around like the flail, things like that. And all of them are like that. They're just really crazy. And the fights, you know, unlike some of the modern movies from Toho or some of the other studios, there's no what they call suitmation. None of these are in suits like the Shin Godzilla film from a few years back. These are all computer generated.
fight.
And they're really well done. I mean, I can understand why they didn't go with people in suits, because a lot of these creations I don't think you could do as a suit. It would either have to be a puppet or have to be, as they chose, computer generated, because there's just no way you're going to fit a human into any of these outfits. And of course, Big Man Japan himself, he doesn't maintain human proportions as he grows. His head is, you know, bigger than it should be for his body. You know, there's just some distortions. He's not like Giant Man or in the movies. He doesn't stay human proportioned as he gets bigger. But as he kills the monsters, there's always, it's like a video game. He'll kill them, and then they'll just be like a shaft of light from the sky, and you'll see their soul just lift clean up out of their body and disappear into the sky. And this happens every time. Yeah, it's kind of funny the first time you see it, but to me, it's really played for laughs in the next to the last monster, the child monster, which is just a baby, and it's laying on top of a building. And he picks it up and starts telling some kind of story, like it, you know, like Big Man's its mother. He's just sitting there listening to it. It's kind of awkward, and he's sort of looking around. And then it bites him. It bites his nipple, and he drops it. And there's just this brief pause as he's looking around, and he looks down, and you just see the shaft of light and the baby. And, of course, this just completely ruins his reputation again, as the country unites behind the dead baby monster and starts calling him, you know, calling for him to be undone and for him to just give up the job, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, this should be the end of it. It's a pretty cool sequence, because he just doesn't care. He's at a bar getting drunk while everybody else is at this thing's funeral and is marching and all this. And he's like, yeah, it wasn't my fault. It bit me. And, you know, what am I supposed to do? Yeah, like I said, it's a really well done movie, and the ending is just bizarre. I mean, the whole movie is bizarre, but this is just like a left field, because you're introduced around Monster 3, the evil stair monster. He beats it. Then all of a sudden, a new monster shows up, and it's a very distorted devil monster. Red skin, huge head, much bigger. I mean, it's almost like a Funko Pop. I mean, give you an idea of the disparity between the head size and the body size. And that extends down to the fist. It's got these massive arms and legs. And then the hands just don't look much bigger than just a regular human size hand, and the feet same way. And it just beats the crap out of Big Man Japan. And he runs from it. And, you know, they play with that as well. That, you know, okay, here's somebody that you run from. And his agent keeps trying to tell him, like, no, you need to fight this, okay? That fight, even though it beat you, that's the best ratings you've gotten in year. You know, the weather report that comes on at 2 o'clock in the morning beats you in ratings. So you need to, you know, go back and fight this thing. But there's a time jump shortly after this fight. And we meet his daughter and his estranged wife at a Big Boy restaurant. And if you don't know what that is, Big Boy is a restaurant chain, and there used to be one around in our area. But their mascot is a, you know, big, happy, oversized, I don't know, I think he's supposed to be a child. I mean, they call him Big Boy. And overall, he's holding an oversized hamburger. And even in the movie, they sort of pointed out with, you know, Big Man Japan going, no, you know, we just come here because I like the food. There's nothing to do with what I do, what my job is. And all through the movie, he's talking about he only gets to see his daughter once a month because of his job. Well, then his wife shows up, and at first she didn't want her daughter to be filmed at all. She's like, you didn't know the camera crew was going to be here, and they argue a little bit about that, and they finally reach a compromise where the camera crew can film them, and it shows them at the zoo and going around doing some things together. But so they have to blur her face, and they have to distort her voice. And so you just immediately cut from that to this little girl sitting in the middle of a zoo. And it's like, so do you like daddy? And just the deepest, you know, just Darth Vader style voice going, I don't know. And, you know, they follow it around, and then they actually talk to the wife. She's like, oh, no, we see him like once every 6 months, you know, if then. And he'll show up, and then he'll be a day, and then it'll be another 6 months. And you find out that even though they're not divorced, she's got a job. Her and her boss are really friendly, and he's really good with the daughter. And, you know, it is exactly what you think it is. It's basically the end of his marriage. But shortly after the child monster, he gets drunk, he doesn't care, he goes home, and the Department of Defense, the Department of Monster Prevention, basically raids his house while he's passed out drunk and turns him into Big Man Japan. And this is where we go into the ending, because the red devil monster showed up again. And, of course, he's their only line of defense against these kind of things. And I don't know, I may have missed it. They do mention that the monster is not from Japan, and that's why he's probably having trouble with it. But doing a little research on it before I started this, they said it's from Korea. And, like, I may have just missed that as I was going through, you know, I'm battling this, and a little bit of medicine, may just forgot to write that down. But again, he gets the crap beat out of him by this thing fairly easily, and it grabs his pipe, and it looks like it's going to be the end of him, and Grandpa shows up. And you think it's going to be, like, you know, the glory days. There's been this build-up to what Big Man Japan, you know, the original was, etc. And no, it's not. It's over fairly quickly, and Grandpa gets knocked down, and you see the shaft of light, and you see his soul start to come up, and then down, and up, and down, and up, and down, until finally Big Man Japan trips over him, trying to run from the monster, and then you see Grandpa die. And again, just when you think everything's going to go wrong for him, this might be the end of him, all of a sudden you get this title screen saying that they're going to switch to live coverage, like the documentary's caught up with the current day. And then it's a complete shift. As I said before, it was computer generated monsters and computer generated Big Man Japan over actual city skyline shots, and over actual outdoor shots they were integrated in. And no, from the moment it says it's going live, it is very much from the moment they go live, it is very much a Ultraman, Power Rangers, closed set, cheap buildings, the main character in a very badly done Big Man Japan costume. And just about the time that you're getting used to that, here comes the Super Justice family, which is Super Justice, his dad, his mom, little sister, and the baby. And they're all very obvious riffs on the Ultraman family, the Ultra family. And they proceed to, I'm not even going to say help, he's hiding. And the four of them, proceed to take out the monster, and there's nothing other than the energy beam at the end. It's not so much a fight as it is a mugging. They beat on him, they rip his clothes off. At one point, they spend like 2 minutes of the Super Justice dad just trying to rip the underwear off the devil monster. They do their super move is almost reminiscent of the Croods, in that they pass the baby to each other, doing headbutts and punches and whatnot, and then Super Justice himself kicks the baby down the devil's throat. And of course, all of them get together and have the super rainbow energy beam, I can't even remember what they called it, and they make Big Man Japan join in on it. And he's sitting there holding hands with them, and he actually takes his hand off, and he's like, I'm doing nothing. Why am I even doing this? But yeah, they kill him, and then immediately, you know, grab poor Big Man Japan and just fly off with him. And it's a very, like I said, if you've seen the old Ultramans, if you've seen, like Johnny Sacco and his robot, or you've seen any of the Power Rangers, you know what to expect from the flying sequence. And he's just looking around like he doesn't know what to do. He doesn't know what to expect. He actually complains because he loses one of his shoes. And that's the end of the film. And you don't know, really what goes on after this. I mean, which, fits with a documentary. But then during the credits, you're treated to him having dinner with the Super Justice family as they critique each other about what they should have done and what could have been done better in the previous fight, in just an incredibly bizarre sequence that is, again, it's Suitmation. It's people in costumes just sitting around this table and talking, and it's very much in vein of like a American Family sitcom of all of them complaining. And like I said, that's the end of it. It's a really bizarre film. If you're like me, you grew up with the Godzilla movies, with Ultraman, if you're into these kind of movies, it's a really funny movie. It's it's on some levels very sad and touching. I mean, it's kind of in vain with the way people want to deconstruct superheroes in pop culture nowadays. It's on the beginning of that curve, pretty much still on the beginning of that curve, because most of the only movie I can think really before this one that sort of, took the piss for superheroes is Mystery Men, which is another one I need to talk about on this show. But we'll save that for another episode. So, end of the day, is it something to watch? Is it something you'd enjoy? Yeah, I liked it. Like I said, to me, it's a really bizarre film that is, it turns funny and it turns really sad. I really felt for Big Man Japan, even at the end. I mean, he's very outclassed. He's very much out of his element, outpowered. You've got the actual Super Justice family who can do, any one of them can do much more than he ever could or ever will. And, you know, just him and his family and all that. But at the same time, it's hard to feel sorry for him because there are points where, like with the death of the child monster, he's just an absolute jerk. You know, after fighting one of the monsters, you're treated to him unwinding at a karaoke bar with some fans. And you get, you know, this one woman who's talking about, oh, you know, if it was up to me, they would hook me up and I'd just fight beside him. You know, he's getting too old for this. And like I said, it's not like a lot of movies I've ever seen, but it's really well done. Even if you're not a fan of the these type of movies, if you're not a fan of the Godzilla, the suits, the Ultraman style stories, it's worth a watch if you're into unusual or weird movies, or you're into superhero films. It is subtitled. It may be, like I said, I watched it through Hoopla, and they offered subtitles. They didn't offer a dubbed version that I know of, but I know, you know, that may change if you find it on a different streaming service. Me personally, I liked the subtitled version. I think that helped me get into it and helped sell it a little better as a documentary to me. And so, yeah, we're going to wrap it up there. And as always, this is Celluloid Fever Dreams. I'm your host, Wyndham Jennings. And if you liked what you heard, tell a friend. If you didn't, well, tell an enemy. Either way, wherever you got this from, feel free to leave us a review. And if you have a movie you want to hear me talk about, if you want to ask some questions about this one, if you want to just leave me a message or whatever, you can find me on Twitter at CFeverDreams. You can find me on Instagram at CelluloidFeverDreams. If you want to help support the show, this week we recently got added to Buy Me a Coffee, and you can financially support the show. Just go on there and look for Celluloid Fever Dreams, and you can leave a $5 donation. You can, well, I don't drink coffee, so in my case, it's buy me a popcorn, since, you know, we do movies. And I'd like to thank you for listening. Thank you for letting me be a little part of your life. Hope to see you again next week. Not really sure what movie we're going to do next, but as soon as I figure it out, I'll let you know. And you guys be good to each other, and try to live your best life. Thank you.